WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me today is the world's biggest fake Undertaker fan, Kay Sawyer Paul. How you doing today?
Good internet to you, sir.
Yes, good internet to you as well. So Leslie Nielsen was on the case, and he was searching for the real Undertaker, and it all culminated at the main event of SummerSlam 1994. In Paul Bearer's Undertaker against Ted DiBiase's Undertaker.
You are simplifying this to a degree that I think brings an injustice to the... I believe they did win an Emmy for this, right?
I believe that's very possible. I haven't looked at the Emmy Awards for that year, but we're just going to go ahead and assume that they did.
Could you imagine, like, you know those, like, Emmy consideration videos that you sometimes see? That it's like a small clip show? Of the TV show. Could you imagine the clip show for this?
It would be stunning.
Generation. Yeah. Undertaker versus Undertaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have, we begin with Paul Bearer leading a casket to the ring. He opens it, and out comes a plume of smoke. He lifts the urn out of it, gives it to the ref. There's no Undertaker in the casket. And Vince suggests that, well, for sure, he's not going to come out of the urn. So we know that is at least we know that anything can happen in the WWF, but apparently that cannot happen. So
that can't. Well, yeah, that would be silly.
It would be. Yes. So Paul opens the urn, a light shines out of it, and then the lights in the arena flicker on and off a bit. We have Ted DiBiase freaking out. The lights completely go out, and in kind of the only cool part, Undertaker emerges from the entry, just kind of his shadow in blue, and, you know, kind of comes out, and, the whole thing is ridiculously hokey, but the actual emergence of the Undertaker I kind of thought was a little bit cool.
You know what? Looking back on it, it's kind of... I don't know. It's during a far more naive period, right? Like the Vince McMahon announcing is... it feels innocent, right? The new generation WWF felt very innocent, far
yes.
more than like the kid-friendly Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper era.
Yes,
right. Like this era felt this. We're making this for 8-year-olds.
Yes, absolutely.
Specifically, there's almost no jokes here for adults to appreciate.
Yeah,
right. But I look back on this Undertaker versus Undertaker thing, and through the eyes of an 8-year-old. Who likes the Undertaker, say. This, I don't know, this sort of works. I don't want to heap too much praise on Undertaker versus Undertaker because I sort of feel like it deserves the place in history that it has.
Yes.
But, I don't know, it isn't as... They did their best with it, you know?
Yeah.
You can't say they didn't commit.
Right.
You can't say that this is one of those WWE stories that fell apart halfway through. They went beginning, middle, and end with this thing.
Yeah, and I don't hate the idea of the story. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea for a story. For people who don't know, basically, Undertaker was taken out by Yokozuna at Survivor Series 90, or no, Royal Rumble 94.
Yeah, Royal Rumble. He was taken out by Yokozuna and about 19 other guys.
Right. Yeah.
So they put him in a casket. Then they did this video package where it looks like the camera's in the casket with the Undertaker.
Yeah.
And he says something about not being able to rest in peace and he'll return someday. And it's a Frosty the Snowman sort of speech, I think.
Okay.
And then he I'm going to say this with as little irony as possible. His spirit is raised to the heavens, never to be seen again.
Yes. So this is approximately 8 months later. And during the middle, sometime, I guess during the summer or spring, it would have been after WrestleMania, Ted DiBiase claims that he has, in fact, you know, purchased the services of the Undertaker, and he comes out with the Undertaker. However, it is, in fact, the wrestler Brian Lee, who later wrestled in WWE as Chains, and also worked in ECW and Smoky Mountain, some other places. Now, at the time, I only watched very, very little, so I felt that, like, that Brian Lee looked enough like The Undertaker where I kind of bought it. And then looking at it now, like, oh yeah, they don't look at all the same, but
they don't look at all the same, but you'd be surprised how much giving somebody long hair and giving them a beard and giving them the same clothes as a guy will feed away, make them look like that guy.
And
right?
It
sort of worked in a sense. Like, yes, under scrutiny, they're not the same.
Right.
But I think they make that point when they do finally stand next to one another.
Yeah.
I think Vince McMahon says something along the lines of, no, there aren't two Undertakers. That's the real one.
Exactly. And they also have the hair covering the face a lot during this match. And they don't show a lot of, like, facial close-ups during this match. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that was intentional.
I want to talk about the Million Dollar Corporation, but we don't need to talk about that now. We can talk about that sort of after the match.
I like
still the first act of that corporation in a sense, right?
Yeah,
that's stable.
I like the disbelief on DiBiase's face is pretty nice when Undertaker comes out too. That
DiBiase's great.
Yeah,
great. I always really enjoyed DiBiase manager. I feel like he had, you know, a pretty lengthy run as a manager in WWF and then WCW, and I always enjoyed his work.
Yeah. Well, he was a fantastic character and a fantastic wrestler, obviously, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But this obviously is not a well-remembered period for, you know, at least popularity standpoint. So, and, you know, things like this also maybe didn't help so much. But so we have...
It is a hard elevator pitch.
Yes.
This one.
So the biggest difference between the Undertakers is the true one has purple gloves and the fake one has gray gloves and boots as well. And really the real Undertaker handles this match pretty, I wouldn't say easily. There's a little bit of a struggle, but it doesn't take a whole lot. Like he starts by he does a throat slash. They go face to face. After an Irish rip, the reel drops down. They do like a drop down sequence and a leapfrog, which I thought was interesting for the style of match. Then the reel clotheslines the fake out of the ring. The fake goes after the Paul Bearer, and then the reel grabs him by the hair, and they works him over a little bit, suplex inside the ring. But the crowd is completely dead for this. Like, as soon as the bell rings, there is nothing at all.
They made a great decision in this match to make the entrances about 15 minutes long and the match about 9 minutes long.
Right.
That was the best decision they could have made because the crowd was loving the entrances.
Right, yeah. They were super into the entrances, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think they knew going in that this was going to be an awful match. Even the kids... We're like, yeah, I kind of want to see the magic and all that, but the wrestling,
Fine, but at that point, the wrestling wasn't terrible. That's the weird thing to me. I mean, it's not, like, good, but it's, you know, it's adequate. I mean, I would say, okay, if it's a horrible match, like, the crowd is going to die 3 or 4 minutes into it once they realize it's horrible, but it wasn't, like, they were dead from the first moment, and I didn't think, you know, looking back on it, it didn't seem that horrible to me.
Sort of remembering all wrestling as a thing where if a good match happens, the crowd will enjoy it. There are just bad crowds sometimes.
That's true, but they were so into the hokey stuff. Like I guess I've certainly seen crowds that are like into like the goofy stuff and the talking and that and just not into the wrestling. So I guess, you know, I guess that could be just this crowd. It just seems strange to me that you're invested in the trappings of the story and not in the match. You don't even like give the match itself like any sort of consideration whatsoever, even before it gets horrible, you know?
I agree. I absolutely agree. The crowd was dead the entire time. They woke up a little bit for the finish, but even then not as much as they did for the entrances.
Right.
It is kind of strange.
Yeah. So they end up doing some weak brawling outside for a little bit. They go up on the apron. Real Undertaker goes for the forearm, but the fake drops his neck on the rope, so the fake kind of works him over a little bit. He tries the rope walk, but the real pulls him down, and then the real Undertaker does the rope walk and actually lands it. They do a Irish Whip reversal spot and try a hot shot attempt by the fake one, but that kind of goes badly. They don't really hit the ropes. At this point, Vince suggests that the crowd is in awe and doesn't know what to think, sort of explaining the silence, which he mentions a couple times. Later, he says, "You can hear the virtual silence of this capacity crowd."
Mm-hmm.
It's a good
point. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to acknowledge it. You can ignore the crowd, but...
But it was evident that...
Yeah, to watch it on TV, and you look at that crowd not caring, and you think, well, why should I care, yeah. Right? So, yeah, the announcers explain the crowd as best they can. It's not quite as much of a total lie as, like, when Hogan comes out at WrestleMania 8 and Jim Ross calls the reaction partisan.
Yes.
but, you know, it's along those lines. Everyone sat on their hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have the fake missing the jumping elbow. The real gets a clothesline, some punches to the face, but then misses a running clothesline and goes over the top awkwardly. The fake attacks the real outside and slams him into the stairs. Fake pounds the real Undertaker in the corner. I kind of noticed the crowd getting a little bit even restless at this point. Just like, okay, we want this to be finished. And they pretty much get to it quickly. The fake choke slams the real. He does the pose, tries to go, sort of stands there and holds his arms. He's about to go down and fold the arms, but then the real sits up. Then the fake hits a tombstone, but then again there's a delay. Goes down for the pin again, but the real sits up. The fake tries a second tombstone, but it's reversed to the real hitting his own jumping tombstone. He decides to grab the throat, lifts him up, and goes for a second tombstone. And even those two tombstones don't really get a big reaction. Then another delay for a bit. He lifts him again. Then he hits one more for the win. And then finally, the three count. There is sort of a decent pop there. And then we have DiBiase sort of scurrying away. And we have a couple of Grim Reapers coming out who had brought the casket in. And they put fake Undertaker in the casket. And they take him away. And we get a light show and so forth. And that's about that's about it.
You're missing one crucial element of this.
What crucial element was am I missing?
You are missing Leslie Nielsen and his cohort from the Naked George Kennedy.
George Kennedy, yeah.
They solved the case.
They closed
not,
the case.
Not because they found the Undertaker, but because they found a brief closed.
Ah, yes. I did miss that crucial detail.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I the Naked Gun is one of my favorite movies, kind of a guilty pleasure movie. So I did sort of enjoy its crossover into wrestling. I mean, in a obviously a wacky sense.
I am always for celebrities coming into wrestling and being wrestling characters.
Okay.
Right, okay. And like, you know, Leslie Nielsen is pretty much just playing his character from the Naked Gun.
Right.
But that's fine, you know, because it's kind of caricature-ish.
Yeah.
Right? It's when celebrities come in and, like, take it either seriously or they don't quite get the absurdity. I think celebrities are there to add a level of absurdity to wrestling.
Sure.
It's like they get sucked into the world and they can't help but follow along with the crazy.
Yes.
You know, and that's when it works out. So I thought that celebrity cameo was actually quite well done.
Yes. Yeah, it was fun and goofy and hokey, and yeah. You know, it certainly was definitely interesting.
Can I? You know what? That's a pretty good thing to call this match. I think this whole, and not just the match, because the match can't exist by itself, but like the whole story, I think, kind of fun and goofy and hokey, and you know, it's not like it was for the WWF title or anything, or
right.
You know, that got defended in a. You know what? I wonder if maybe that's why the crowd was dead. because they just watched a 35-minute classic cage match between two of the best wrestlers in the company at the time.
Yeah, even that match, I kind of recall the crowd maybe not being having moments where it wasn't super into it. So maybe mm-hmm. that maybe it just wasn't a good crowd. It was Chicago, which normally has a reputation of being a good crowd, but they don't always win.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the Million Dollar Corporation real quick.
Yeah, just quick. They are very much a forgotten stable. Like, when people talk about, like, stables in wrestling, mm-hmm. I very rarely hear talk of the Million Dollar Corporation. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they were super influential, but if you were watching WWF between, I'd say, spring 1994 and spring 1996... You couldn't go 15 minutes without watching a Million Dollar Corporation story.
Okay. And recall, who was in the Million Dollar Corporation, or who were the main figures of it, besides Ted DiBiase, of course?
Well, that's sort of the problem, is that they never had a guy who was really breakout. They sort of, much like how in the Attitude Era, they would make these little groups of guys that weren't really doing anything and coalesce them in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
The Million Dollar Corporation was kind of a grab bag of all the people in WWF who weren't really doing anything or had sort of stale characters. And so they added them to this group. So you had DiBiase as the leader. You had IRS, because he used to be a tag team partner with him. So that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You had Nikolai Volkoff.
Yeah, who had come back because he'd been a good guy, and then he came back, and apparently the idea was that he needed money, so he joined DiBiase's stable.
Yeah. There was Kama.
The Supreme Fighting Machine.
The Supreme Fighting Machine, Kama, yeah. Yeah,
who was later the Godfather, and before was Papa Shango.
That's right. This gentleman has had more characters in wrestling than
most.
Than most, certainly.
Yeah.
And Kama would go on to fight The Undertaker at SummerSlam 95 because he stole his urn at WrestleMania 11 while fighting King Kong Bundy, who was also a member of this group.
Yeah, Undertaker fought the Million Dollar Corporation for a long time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like a year, year and a half.
Yeah. We also had Bam. I think probably the crown jewel of the Million Dollar Corporation was Bam Bigelow.
Was Bam Bam, yeah, because he would headline WrestleMania 11. WrestleMania 11 is very Million Dollar Corporation heavy.
Yes.
As is this show and SummerSlam 95.
Mm-hmm.
Less so WrestleMania 12, because I think they were moving away. But, I mean, at WrestleMania 12, who do you have? You've got Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes.
As a member of this group.
Right.
He debuted as a member of this group.
Yeah. The group pretty much was done. He was kind of kind of what was left too,
in a sense. But I'm looking at the Wikipedia page here, and the last one of note that I want to talk about is Tatanka, who at SummerSlam '94 joined the corporation by attacking Lex Luger.
Yeah, after they were teasing Luger would turn for a long time as well. You know, that was kind of the idea, is that Luger was going to be the one who sold out, and the Tatanka was the one who ended up doing it.
What's interesting is that's probably the only story of note for Tatanka. He was, you know, a wrestler that was there for a while.
Yeah.
And then he did this, which was at least quasi-interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting at the time. Again, very, very intermittently watching. But, yeah, I was like, oh, when I saw a little bit of the build-up, and then when I saw Tatanka did it, I'm like, oh, that bastard. No.
Yeah.
It also says
here that Psycho Sid and the 1-2-3 Kid were members.
Yeah, that was late 95 because they brought in Sid, and then 1-2-3 Kid turned on Razor and joined. He was kind of like one of the last ones before Austin, you know.
Well, I'm glad you explained that to me because I wasn't going to look it up.
Okay.
Yeah. They also spell it wrong here. Psycho, S-Y-C-H-O.
That's how WWE spelled it.
Oh, it's so incorrect. Why would they do that?
I don't know. Why do they spell core with two R's?
Why would they spell what, sorry?
Core with two R's. The Wade Barrett stable.
Never heard of him.
Okay.
Not familiar with his work.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, yes.
I think we said everything we can say about this.
I agree. So, Everyone, of course, check out WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com. We're going to continue this SummerSlam series until the day of the big show. And check out the Footnotes of Wrestling, which is the only wrestling news source that you will ever need. And keep on listening, and we'll catch you later, and goodbye.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.